James unfortunately couldn't be here, but he wanted me to mention that he's from JFK International Airport. He's an identifier there. And he has some historical pictures from JFK here. It used to be called Idlewild Airport before John F. Kennedy was assassinated, and they named it after him. And they had a plant inspection station a plant inspection station is where all propagative material, plants for planting, must enter. And they didn't really have one set up there until 1957, and they used the Hoboken, New Jersey plant inspection station and until then. Just an example of what an identifier might see on a typical day in a plant inspection station. All tree seeds need to go through plant inspection stations, and they now have x-ray machines, so they can look at these seeds, and these are Araucaria, or a Brazilian pine from Brazil, that they were able to x-ray and see larvae inside the seed, and then they did have an adult emerge, which they were able to identify. They sent it to SEL, and John Brown confirmed it as a Cydia araucariae that was, you know, required action. So this is just one example. As mentioned in the other talks, we are responsible for not just insects, but federal noxious weeds, mites and ticks, snails and slugs. And there's a picture of a mail shipment that James says is actually true snail mail, because it was full of snails, a package. And insects of every life stage, and mostly what we see are immatures, which present their own challenges. And of course, plant diseases and nematodes. Many of the insect pests and also plant diseases that we find are considered cosmopolitan. Many of them are stored products pests. They show up repeatedly, and we don't take action on those. We only take action on what we consider quarantine pests, which are organisms that feed on plants that are not known to occur in the U.S. or are limited distribution. James wanted me to mention that there's an intersection of taxonomy and quarantine work that is very important. He says that providing accurate determinations to the lowest taxonomic level, possible further sound regulatory decision making regarding pest exclusion. And this takes place not only at our ports of entry, but we have inspectors in various locations around the world that are inspecting commodities before they're exported to the U.S., like flower bulbs and Chilean fruit and various fruit from around the world. Also pre-departure, which I added to the slide and I spelled it wrong, but pre-departure means that we're looking at passengers in countries before they leave, like Canada. We don't look at them, but Customs and Border Protection does. And also, I believe they're doing that from Ireland, but also from, as mentioned before, from Hawaii and Puerto Rico, which, of course, are U.S., but we find it most useful to inspect passenger cargoes before they leave. And so those interceptions are looked at and processed by our identifiers as well. We have there are 327 ports of entry. We have 17 plant inspection stations, and there are 89 identifiers with PPQ now. So these interceptions actually generate a lot of valuable information for people who are interested in pest distributions and pest hosts. Many times there are new hosts recognized or new localities from around the world. And it may be also the first indication that pests are expanding their range. The countries themselves that have it might not realize it until we intercept it from there. And sometimes the information generated results in taxonomic revisions. They're always just finding undescribed species or various pests. And there's a picture here of there was a Tarsanemid mite that Ron Ochoa said is probably a new species, but we couldn't find out what host it is in because it was from this box of all kinds of different plants, and they didn't know which one it came from. We had a couple of weevils that Jens Prenna at SEL said are undescribed, and one was on basil from basil from South Africa, and the other was on amaranth leaves from Jamaica. And this happens fairly frequently where new species are, ones that don't appear in the literature are found. I just wanted to just quickly show the method that identifiers use for getting pests identified. You know, after they've had a lot of experience, they've developed what we call identification authority, where they're through their history, they've shown that they can identify particular pests, so they're given ID authority. If they don't have ID authority, and this is mainly for cargo interceptions where we have something on hold, the interceptions are turned in by either Customs and Border Protection or our own PPQ personnel looking at propagated material. They go to the area identifiers, and then they, if it's cargo on hold, they either send a digital image to SEL in the case of insects, or they send the specimen. And we also have the other specialists like botanists, nematologists, and our malacologists and plant pathologists where those pests go. They quickly identify it to the extent they can, and you know, many times it, if it's species level, and that information is communicated to our staff in Riverdale, Maryland, and National Identification Service. And then we communicate back to the area identifiers whether this pest requires action or not. And action means either re-export, destroy, or fumigate the shipment. And if it's no action, of course, they can release it. Now, for insects, of course, we depend heavily on USDA ARS Systematic Entomology Laboratory, located either in Beltsville, Maryland, or at the National Museum of Natural History at the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C. And these are the names of the many of the of all the specialists of SEL that we depend on for these identifications. And APHIS funds them to do this on a daily basis. We have 55 entomologists located around the country, 10 botanists, 25 plant pathologists, and a number of other specialists. This is James Korecki here, the author of this talk, looking at a shipment of some kind of plants brought in by air cargo. They brought the container over to the plant inspection station to be inspected. Now this diagram sort of indicates where we have a concentration of identifiers, and it's not necessarily by port, but sort of by region. So if you look in Miami, Fort Lauderdale area, we have 12, and this includes entomologists, plant pathologists, and botanists. In the Northeast here around JFK and New Jersey, Philadelphia, Baltimore, 19. And then we have, you know, somebody in Boston. We have them in different locations around the country. Some of them are domestic identifiers. And then in the Southern California area, you know, San Diego, Los Angeles, a concentration of 11. And you can see, you know, Houston, Dallas, 7, San Francisco, 6. So, and, you know, so you can kind of get an idea where people are concentrated. This is another one just showing entomologists where they're distributed. I won't really belabor this. But we do have also what we call national level specialists and collateral duty specialists who they don't look at the urgents that are sent in, but they there's so many interceptions generated from baggage and others besides urgent cargo that it's still valuable data and we need to have it identified. And so these identifiers have developed specialties of their own. Some cases they do it full-time, some cases they do it part-time, and they process many of the routine interceptions, we call them, from baggage and so on. Now, identifiers are normally hired at a GS-11 level, and then they're given some tasks they must complete if they want to get a GS-12. And, you know, it includes developing a specialty, working on various training and providing training to others. And so it's a way that there's some career advancement for identifiers, you know, where they can stay in their location and get a, with more responsibility, get a higher pay grade. These pictures are from a digital imaging training that was held several years ago of our identifiers. They also get on-the-job training when they're hired 2 weeks with another identifier. They learn how to, if they don't know already, they learn how to mount various groups like scales, mealybugs, thrips on slides. They might work with a specialist individually for a while, and then they also complete some other approved training. And sometimes we have workshops where we concentrate on certain taxonomic groups, and we bring in the identifiers to learn about mites or mealybugs, scales, that sort of thing. And these are held intermittently around the country with specialists in those areas. When they develop these specialties, they're expected to be able to identify 70% of the cargo interceptions within their discipline. They need to develop a reference collection. They deliver training on their specialty to other identifiers, participate in programs outside the normal area of coverage, and develop taxonomic keys and aids for PPQ and other cooperators. Another part of their duties, and it's really the duty of any PPQ officer or safeguarding specialist, is that they need to be able to supervise fumigations, and this is usually methyl bromide fumigations for commodities, because they get called out to do this and or do it as a part of their job, and are, you know, need to be certified to do that. Also, training on the use of our Pest ID database. They come to our headquarters where I work in Riverdale, Maryland, and spend some time with us learning about how things work in headquarters, and then they'll take a class on risk assessment as well. One of the things they do is develop training aids for the Customs and Border Protection inspectors, you know, how to look for certain pests depending on the pathway, and also develop procedures locally. I mean, many times there's, you know, it's very specific to the port and where the pathways are. And so once you learn about a pathway, develop information and deliver that as training to the inspectors. The identifiers also, in addition to providing the identification, which is their main job, and training, they maintain reference collections at their ports of entry, and sometimes these reference collections have been developed over years, and they're very substantial, and they are expected to keep adding to those and to be used now and in the future. They make treatment recommendations. Not only do they have the training to do treatments, but when we say action on a particular pest, they are sometimes expected to come up with the treatment recommendation itself. If live insects come into the country, those are directed to plant inspection stations, and those are also inspected to make sure that all the permit requirements are met. Of course, they do reports, and they act as a technical advisor to their port risk committees. These are just some examples that James had of live insects that have been brought in to JFK. In the first case, it's mites. They pack them in vermiculite. I believe the second one are, I have to look at my notes. But anyway, these are all live insect interception or live insect shipments that come in. Sometimes they're biocontrol agents. You may have spoken to one of our identifiers. If you were a recipient of one of these shipments, they may call you and confer with you about the shipment. I do notice the red palm weevil there. I don't know why that was brought in live, but And these, they, you know, if you work at a port of entry, you see all kinds of weird stuff, I'm telling you. People bring in this case, some wasps' nests that were, I'm not sure if they were alive or not, I hope not, but they were packed inside a, many times they're smuggled. They're, this is some kind of probably Asian medicine or something packed in a jar. Stink bugs from Mexico. When I worked in Nogales, we used to see people bring in live pentatomids that were used for food. They would sprinkle them on tacos someplace, somewhere down south in the interior of Mexico. And I heard they're quite good. And then snails. People bring in live snails all the time for food. So this is James's last slide, the hind end of a bruket. So, does anybody have any questions? I think I might be able to answer them, even though this is...
Three minutes, so... Anybody have questions?
Go ahead. In some cases, we've had training where it was open, maybe not to the public, but to university taxonomists and you know, state departments of agriculture taxonomists, depending on the group and, you know, if we had space.
Can I comment on that, too?
Yeah, Joe wants to comment.
Yeah, we have an arrangement with the National Plant Diagnostic Network where when they produce some kind of training for their diagnosticians, they like to save us a couple of slots, and we reciprocate. So I guess the biggest problem is, of course, that most taxonomic training, if it's hands-on, has very limited capacity. You know, you get a university lab at a time when the students aren't there, and you cram yourself in there, and maybe 17, maybe 25 people can take that course, and that's it, so you have to limit it, too. So there is a problem with that. But, yeah, they aren't as frequent as we'd like because they all have to be custom designed. You know, there aren't curricula out there for this kind of thing, so you can't just sign up. You know, you have to create something and come with it. But, yeah, we've been working a lot with the Diagnostics Network to try to get both our diagnosticians trained this way.
Another question? In the back?
Yeah, I came in a little bit late, so you may have addressed this. So could you comment on the phenomenon of, like, internet sales of species? I imagine there's people who are buying these things, be it the insects or animals or plants, and that just seems like it would really complicate things for you guys trying to catch invasive species before they come in.
You're right, it does. We do have a group that... does regular internet searches for illegal organisms being sold, and we have a smuggling interdiction and trade compliance group that actually investigate. They'll go out, and if we find somebody and we can locate where they are and if they're in this country, we will go out and we'll seize the material. But it's a huge problem, and a lot of times it's people out of ignorance. A lot of times they know exactly what they're doing, and they're trying to avoid, you know, detection by us, you know, but they are selling these pests within the country.
So in the event that somebody knows what they're doing, and then say they move their business off out of the country, that's where you guys, like, track them down on the internet, track their business, you know, how they're selling it. How do you go after that?
Well, it's hard to enforce it if somebody's selling it offshore. But if we have intelligence, you know, knowing that they're shipping it, we try to intercept the packages as they're coming in. But it's difficult. You know, mail and that sort of thing has a lot of protections. But, you know, it's Customs and Border Protection's responsibility, and a lot of times they use various means of targeting various countries or pathways, and sometimes they use dogs. I don't know if they train them to find live insects, but that's another way.
Okay. Thank you very much, Jim. Mm-hmm.